Radio. From the Left Coast, I'm your host, Linda, and this great show is brought to you by our wonderful people at Patriot Families and Hollis Buchanan from Patriot Families, and that's www.patriotfamilies.com, families with a Y-S. I'm so glad to see you folks here today, Bill, Ron, Mike, and Yo. I did send out an email blast earlier to many people locally here in California. Hopefully they'll join us, but we will see. My little circus review there, because it just seems like the theater just never stops. You know, there's about five or six fantastic places here I can go see shows or watch people dance, the Old Globe, the Civic Theater, and Copley Hall, and Escondido Arts Center. And I could spend like $85 to go see theater in the live, but all I have to do is turn on the news and the stage is all set. I'm telling you guys, it's amazing. The political craziness going on is going to get worse and worse. I mean, look at Biden. And then, of course, there's these people. Absolutely. Hey, Daniel, welcome. Welcome, everyone, to the show. It's amazing. I just hope they let Biden stay on the ticket and let him just keep destroying the entire party. However, we have problems with our own, you know, people, of course. Now they're thinking that he's going to dump Biden and get Hillary on the ticket. Who knows what they're going to do? It's just theater. It makes you crazy. So what I did get was once in a while, oh, the sound is vibrating. I'm hoping it's not doing it now. So maybe I'm too close to it. And my sound levels are hopefully coming through. Okay, thanks for that little deal. Thanks for everyone joining. I did get from Ron today, and I'm going to try to go through this. It's called Paul Ryan's Global Vision, an Infinite Foreign Policy Boondoggle. And this was by Joel McDermott. This was today, August 15th. Let's see. He writes for antiwar.com, the Romney campaign is making a major effort to reach out to the Tea Party, grassroots conservative activists, and Ron Paul's libertarian supporters. They've not only invited Rand Paul to speak at the Tampa convention, they also scheduled a tribute to Ron Paul video to be shown to the delegates. However, these are mere crumbs. The video is not likely to highlight Paul's more interesting positions, such as his vociferous opposition to the American empire and its endless wars. Goes on. No, the real cake, complete with quasi-libertarian frosting, is Paul Ryan, whose addition to the ticket opens up the prospect of having Ayn Rand, the latest novelist and philosopher of objectivism, become a campaign issue. That some libertarians are ready, willing, and able to swallow this guff, I have no doubt. They claim Ryan gets the free market. Well, hoop-de-doo, so does the Chinese Communist Party these days. However, he doesn't really get it at all, not even to the extent that the heirs of Deng Xiaopingdu, because he thinks we can still have an overseas empire and a limited government with low taxes and free enterprise. The Chi-Coms, to use the right-wing Republican phraseology, are isolationists, i.e. their foreign policy amounts to minding their own business and making as much money as possible. Ryan, on the other hand, is all about maintaining American leadership in the world, and the way he tells it, leadership is a polite euphemism for domination. In a speech before the Alexander Hamilton Society, where else, Ryan gave a full-throttled expression to what American foreign policy would look like under his watch. And while the vice presidency is an office with little power, from the tone of the speech, the office of the vice president, the Republican administration would once again become a nest of neocons lobbying for more and bigger wars. Oh, great. Ryan may be a neocon drone, but he is no Dan Quayle. He realizes, as he put it in his talk to the Hamiltonians, that our fiscal policy and our foreign policy are on a collision course, and if we fail to put our budget on a sustainable path, then we are choosing decline as a world power. Translation, we can't have an empire given our present financial straits. So what's the solution? To any normal American, whoever wanted an empire to begin with, the answer is simple. Give up the imperial pretensions to global leadership and tend to our own ill-used and leached-out garden. The infamous Ryan budget wants to raise military spending and declares any cuts off limits because, don't you know, it's a strategic matter and not a question of dollars and cents. Unbelievable. It's the end of that particular article, and I will come back here, and I want to pick up my caller. Hello, you're on the air. Can you hear me? Okay, I'm picking up a call, but I'm not getting any sound. Can you hear me? All right, I can't get the callers. Something's wrong with this thing. We've got, welcome to the show, Rod. Let me see if I can do this. Are you there? I have 214. Yes.
Yes. This is Daniel with Reclamation Project.
Hey, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just got here just in time.
Okay, great. I was going through that, and I'm not bad-mouthing people. You know, there is no perfect candidates, and I know a lot of people. I know Bill likes the Romney Ryan ticket for one reason, and that's to get President Zero, President Pinocchio. What are you going to do, you guys? You've got the choice. Unfortunately, we don't. We just don't have the power, apparently, to get what we want. We love Ron Paul. That would be my choice, but you know, I don't even know if he's going to be if he's being invited to speak at this RNC convention.
In my opinion, no matter who's up there, whether they be Republican or Democratic and everything, the government's already bought and paid for anyway. And they are owned. They're going to do what the puppet masters want. We're looking at trying to get back to the Constitution, everything with what we're doing. We have, on our site, www.reclamationprojectx.org,
right.
We have an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We feel that the people wrote the Constitution. The Constitution formed the federal government. So we, the people, have the ability to amend our own Constitution. And the amendment we have there for the Constitution does five things. Number one, it gets rid of corporate personhood. Number two, it gets rid of any law, presidential fiat, act, treaty, anything that infringes upon the personal rights of the sovereign individual.
Well, Daniel, what I've thought about, and I know many people on my site, or our site, patriotfamilies.com, has thought about, is we've got pretty much the laws in place, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, most importantly, of course, having the governed be at the behest of the governed. In other words, we are the sovereign power, not anybody else, and certainly not the feds or the federal government,
yep,
which has been transformed into a national situation, and individual state sovereignty seems to be going by the wayside ever since, God knows when, probably Lincoln's time. And I know that book that Ron talked about earlier on is on my list to do. I'm reading right now The Road to Serfdom, and it's quite an eye-opener, believe me. Okay, we got to pick up Ron here. Hello, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, young lady, how are you? Daniel, welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you.
I went to your guys' website, and I did sign the petition. One of the things that I would point out, as far as the corporate personhood, one of the main problems we face in this country is summed up in a single amendment to the Constitution, and that's the 14th Amendment.
Yes.
That's
one of the amendments that needs to go by the wayside.
Yes, and that it's through the 14th Amendment that the Supreme Court has conjured up this incorporation doctrine, which is a bunch of garbage.
That's where they got Citizens United.
Correct. And, you know, I was just talking with Mike from the hot seat. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln was instrumental in getting this garbage pushed through. Lincoln brought in the Hamiltonian British mercantilism system that they had been vying for all along. And that was really the beginning of the end of the United States. And just an aside, and then I'll let you guys take over. If you've ever watched the Civil War documentary that Ken Burns put together, if you've ever seen that on PBS, there's one historian in there, real nice guy. His name is Shelby Foote, F-O-O-T-E. And there's a clip of Shelby Foote explaining the impact of the Civil War. He said, prior to the Civil War, people said the United States are.
Yep.
And after the war, without any prompting from anyone, people began to say the United States is. And that's the difference.
Yes, it is. Very much so. We are not just a conglomeration of states that are held together by a federal government looking over our rights. It's become an incorporated federal government controlling all the states.
It's a central national government.
Yep, and it's
which
evil.
Which is exactly what Hamilton and those
wanted.
Of his ilk wanted. And, you know, partway through the Constitutional Convention, you can see it. They shifted, and it's like a light bulb went off, and they said, oh, you know what? This will work. We can do this. This will work to implement what we want. I tout Mike Church quite a bit. I don't know if any of you guys have ever listened to him. He is on Sirius Satellite Radio. He's the only semi-mainstream talking head that I'll listen to. He put together a DVD series called The Spirit of 76. And it goes through, it's a reenactment of the entire Constitutional Convention from beginning to end. It's phenomenal.
Well, even back when it was being written, there was a big war between the Jeffersonians and the Hamiltonians.
Absolutely.
Basically the Jefferson group won out until the Civil War, and then the Hamiltonians took over.
That is correct. And the Whig Party was constantly attacking the Jeffersonians.
Mm-hmm.
It was a constant push. And I found it interesting that when Abraham Lincoln won his second term as president, he got a letter of congratulations from none other than Karl Marx.
Yes.
Mike was asking about the Spirit of 76, and he needed some information. I don't know if you can put anything in the chat room for him.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, great, thanks. So,
if nothing else, if he misses it, tell him to call me. I'll tell it to him. I wrote the notes down.
Awesome. Okay, yeah, Rod was having trouble hearing. I hope he can hear us now. So anyway,
yeah,
he's typing.
The sound is kind of fluttering.
Yeah, all the sound is kind of weird. What I had was a couple pieces from the book that was written in the 30s by F.A. Hayek, Road to Serfdom, and what they were talking about when they say planning, they were talking about industrialization planning during wartime, and this, you know, this book was written quite a while ago, published here in the mid-40s, I believe, in America. And this piece was written by small paragraph, Hayek's friend and LSE colleague Lionel Robbins, who in 1937 wrote, planning is the grand panacea of our age, but unfortunately its meaning is highly ambiguous. In popular discussion, it stands for almost any policy which it is wished to present as desirable, when the average citizen, be he Nazi or communist or summer school liberal, warms to the statement that what the world needs is planning, what he really feels is that the world needs that which is satisfactory. So, again, what they were doing was they had come to the conclusion that since this planning, whether it be industrialization or social planning, social engineering, economic planning, et cetera, works so well in wartime, oh, let's do this in peacetime. And that's what they were kind of going over. This other one was quite telling when what Hayek was doing is he's going through the psychology of humans, figuring out why they think the way they do, how they are transformed into thinking ideologically in certain ways by these entities such as socialism, communism, and how it permeates and how it's percolating through history in every country for a long, long time. And he says, it seems almost as if we did not want to understand the development which has produced totalitarianism because such an understanding might destroy some of the dearest illusions to which we are determined to cling, which pretty much says it all. And what he further went on to say was that it's very simple to blame, you know, the Germans for becoming Nazis instead of going to the root cause of all of these, you know, root ideologies branching off into others. And he says, once you take your eye off of focusing on what's true, such as the works of Bastiat or Cicero or Montesquieu or John Locke, and individualism and real liberty and tolerance, then you're lost. And that's what's happened to all of us. What say you?
What we have is a government that's gone rogue.
Yes.
And it's gone rogue basically from the cabal that basically it runs it. The banksters who own the Federal Reserve have control over nearly every government in the world.
Yep.
Even the central banks have a central bank, the BIS, in Switzerland, in Basel, Switzerland.
And the World Bank.
All the central banks. Not the World Bank. This is the BIS, the central banks of all the central banks.
Right, the Bank of International Settlements, correct.
Right, and everything. And, you know, they have sat there and fomented wars through their power. They one of the groups that we listen to every now and then called them the Octopus. Because they have their tentacles and everything. They have them in the media. They control the media. They control the governments. They control the financial districts, everything through their central banks. And they foment wars so they can basically finance both sides and keep the control of the countries through debt. And that's what has happened here. They have control of our government, and that's why, you know, the way we look at it is the people wrote the Constitution. The Constitution formed the federal government. So we have the right to amend our Constitution. And that's why we're going at it to a grassroots level. You know, you go to our website, you can see the amendment that's been written. Sid, my partner, who is not here tonight and everything, he wrote the amendment and everything. And we have it on our website in the petition because we want to do this from the grassroots level. We want to be able to walk into Washington with 100 million signatures going, this is what the people want, this is what the people are going to get.
I really wish you luck on that, Daniel. I don't know. That's going to be a tough row to hoe, but at least we can try. It's difficult.
I understand what you're talking about, and it'll take some time and everything, but the only way it'll work is if all the people that are already awake, you know, look at it, sign the petition, and then start every week awakening one more person. You know,
yeah,
that's the only way we'll get it done, is we all have to work together, regardless of ideologies.
Right.
You know, because face it, the government is coming down on both the left and the right. You know, they're not picking on one side of the ideological spectrum.
Well, we have that right-left paradigm. We've been totally, thoroughly indoctrinated in it, and that's where people, they can't think outside that tiny box, and it's because we've been living with it for ages. And, you know, those of us who have tried and attempted to educate ourselves the best we can, and we're just seeking the truth, going back into history. We're looking at what Adam Smith said, or John Locke, and what the Hamiltonian theory was, or the John Adams theory, or the Jeffersonians and of course, the Ron Pauls. And if you can cut through the garbage, and that's the hard part, you've got to find, you dig deep enough and you'll find it. And as Ron has said, because he did read that book, which I will get later, on The Real Lincoln, and he's discovered things that just made his eyes bleed. And I discovered things about the World War II that just, it, you definitely do need an airsick bag when you're reading it because it's horrible.
In World War II, the Japanese people did not want to go to war. In fact, the Imperial Army, the people that basically protected the Emperor of Japan, about a week before they attacked Pearl Harbor, actually encircled the Deity Building in Tokyo and urinated on it.
Oh, lovely.
because they did not like what their government was doing.
Yeah,
if you look at all the different countries, it's the governments that are fomenting all this. The people want to be friends with everybody.
Well, true.
The normal people want to be friends with everybody. They don't want the war.
Hey, Linda. Linda, try pulling your microphone back away from your computer a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Something's interfering with whenever you're talking, it gets real garbly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how about
like
now?
The gargling water.
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay.
So far.
All right.
But, you know, we found out on our website, because we track our website, and it gives locations of where the people are coming from. And we found out that not only are the people in the U.S. looking at our website, but we have a large number of people from China, from Russia,
wow,
Germany, the Netherlands, that are checking out our website. And this is not just a problem in the U.S. This is a problem worldwide, and people all over are waking up. And I think they're trying to see what we are
yes.
going to do about the problem before they do anything.
Yes.
Exactly.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that kind of – I guess it kind of tickles me, and I know a lot of people that are still waking up and they're, you know, somewhere in the process.
Right.
One of the things that, you know, I heard very early on is, you know, they want a one world government and a one world currency. Well, I got news for people. They already have that. They already have that. And it's
the
called
UN.
It's called the petrodollar in the United Nations.
Yep.
And
yeah,
they were trying to establish a United Nations. You know, I put up a link earlier for the Lieber Code that Abraham Lincoln had instituted in 1863. And, you know, if you read it, that was the quote-unquote first example of international rules of war.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the problem started with the U.S. I mean, back at the end of the Revolutionary War when they signed papers saying that we would make reparations to England.
Yes.
For all the cost of
war.
That's what started it right there. That put this country into debt.
Well, and that was Hamilton's ideology. In order for the United States to be creditworthy, we had to show that we were in debt, which was the reason that he reasoned that we needed the Bank of the United States.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that only lasted 20 years, and when they went to close that down, the Bank of the United States even told them that before you close me down, we will ruin your economy. And they put them into a depression.
Yes. Well, that was what the War of 1812 was all about.
Yes. Well, even with the Federal Reserve Act, which was not even put together by politicians, it was put together by bankers on Jekyll's Island, and
correct.
Then they brought politicians in on Christmas vacation to pass it. I think it was two congressmen that they brought in during Christmas vacation to pass it in 1913. And Wilson was behind it, and that's why he got elected, because he would push it.
Well, they knew. See, they split the vote when they ran Roosevelt, and he did his little Bull Moose Party garbage.
Right.
By the way,
yep.
I live in Georgia, and long before I knew anything about anything, my family and I, we vacationed at Jekyll Island, and I've seen the room where that was done. They got a little plaque on the door, you know. And
they should have a plaque on the door for it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's called Kahuna's.
It's called the Jekyll Island Club. It was a hotel that was owned by the DuPonts, if I remember correctly. And
yes.
When you go in and tour it, you go upstairs and there's a red door and it's got a brass plaque on the door. And it says, behind this door, the Federal Reserve System was born.
Yep.
Yep.
That's amazing. It's amazing that you probably thought back after you started learning about it.
When I heard the presentation by G. Edward Griffin on the creature
right.
of Jekyll Island, the hair on the back of my neck was standing up.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm
I've seen it. What they've done is they've treated this country like putting the frog in the cold water and turning the heat on.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he's boiling.
Yep.
They have slowly taken us over a century.
Oh, so yeah, it's been longer than that.
We don't know what's going on. We accept it because it's in little bitty steps.
Well, it's
and they indoctrinate us through the educational system.
Well, that's true, but this has been going on way, way further beyond that, and that's why the some of the pieces in this book are so telling, because Hayek recognized that psychological, you know, kind of conundrum that we find ourselves in, and the way that the mind works, and that people just can't accept certain things, and everybody wants to find a way to blame some other entity or enmity or whatever that's going on, instead of looking into their own souls and looking at who we are, what do we really believe in, whether you're from Russia, Germany, China, America, it doesn't matter. You know, if we don't go back to that declaration and what John Adams and I believe Jefferson believed in, we're toast.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to stand up.
Well,
so,
the way we have to do it is we have to unite together and stand as a people. We need to get rid of all the adjectives. We
yep.
need to get rid of it because that's how the government has conquered us. They divide and conquer. They
yep,
throw
sure.
the ideologies out there. They throw the races out there. They throw the religions out there.
Yeah,
and they sit there and divide and conquer us, but they keep us divided so they can keep control over us. They figured nobody will unite because of the different ideologies between everybody, and that's what we need to break through. And this is something that will do it. Now, this is not your iron limit. It does not fix everything, but what it does is lays the groundwork. This gives
right.
the power back to the people. We still have to go in after that. This is step one, and it's a major step. This gives the power back to the people. After that, we have to fix the financial and monetary system. Which
is
basically calling a spade a spade. We need to get rid of the Fed and the IRS.
Oh gosh!
I'm not with
the IRS.
The IRS is just a collection agent for the Fed.
Yep.
For the Federal Reserve. That's all they are.
God.
I mean, they're not even based on U.S. soil.
That is a fact.
And we do not need a central bank in the United States owned by foreign powers deciding our economy.
And that's what we have, and this is wrong.
I mean, if there is a central bank, which we don't need one, but if there is a central bank, it needs to be owned by the people.
Well, that,
not
that's
by the
why,
government,
right?
By the people.
And that is why Ron Paul has been, you know, striving to get competing currencies allowed. And you know,
mm-hmm.
somehow along the way, we fell into this ideology that only the federal government can create money, and that's crap, because it's in your constitution that no state can coin anything but gold or silver.
That's right.
Utah's
See,
doing it.
Before the Civil War, the states had all their different currency.
Oh, that's true. You got to realize that Congress monetized they monetized debt. Silver in 1853.
Mm-hmm.
You think about this, okay? Gold and silver were largely what was circulating at that time, and Congress went and borrowed $20 million to mint silver coins. So they were practicing fractional reserve banking at that moment in time. They're
wow.
borrowing money at interest to coin money.
Yes.
To flood the market with silver coinage was exactly the purpose. That's actually what led to the movie The Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Williams Jennings Bryan and the Free Silver Movement. They so flooded the market with silver that it fell on its face, and gold became the replacement. And it became such a problem, and they knew that the power structure in D.C. was who was pulling the strings. And it weighed heaviest on the poor men, the farmers. You know, in The Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man is the industrial worker. The Scarecrow is the farmer. The Cowardly Lion was William Jennings Bryan, you know, a politician. The Wizard of Oz with Washington, D.C. was the Land of Oz.
Yep.
When me and Sid first started Reclamation Project X, one thing I always came up with that made him laugh and everything was, one of my favorite lines was, we can't do anything with the government until we get rid of the wizard behind the curtain.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And everything. And that's what we're all about. We're, number one, we need to get the power back to the people. Now, what this amendment does is it sets up the network and the power structure so that the people have power again. At that point, we go through, we get a Monetary Reform Act going, everything, whether it's the one from Money Masters or whatever. But we don't want, now, you know, I love Ron Paul and what he's all about. Don't get me wrong. We do not back any politician.
Right.
And everything. That's just one thing we agreed on from the get-go. Because we want to concentrate on the Constitution and getting the people back to the Constitution. But the one problem I have with Ron Paul is he backed off of one thing that he's always said. For years, he wanted to end the Fed. Now he says he only wants to audit it. There's no way that they're going to open up their real books for anybody.
No.
There's no way to audit the Fed. Yeah, there's no way to audit the Fed. We need to get rid of them and get, you know, pull the charter immediately and then send the accountants in there to audit them. With the power people out of the way.
It can that be done? I mean,
Congress can
if the people
end the,
stand
end
up
the
together.
Fed,
yes, it can be done.
Congress can end the Fed's charter. They can actually repurchase the Fed for $450 million.
I thought it was $4 billion, but, you know.
No, it's $450 million. That is the original stake put up by the Federal Reserve, the 12 districts. All they have to do is buy out the stake.
Wow.
Okay. It's not like it's an insurmountable
amount.
Yeah. And see, that's what we have to do. We have to get the power back in the people where we institute the rest of the things we need to bring this whole country back to the people and to the Constitution. And then at that point, yes, we do need to spend money. We need to spend money building up the infrastructure and the small and medium-sized businesses so that the unemployment comes back down, because that's where the unemployment, you know, is the manufacturing base that we've outsourced out of the country is one of the things that's made our unemployment go up. We need to bring the manufacturing base back and get small and medium businesses going again. The multinational big corporations, we need to get the charters back to the states like it originally was instead of the national.
So, that Daniel, that's why our unemployment rate is so high, is because of the manufacturing base and the monetary system. Does the EPA and these ridiculous UN regulations have anything to do with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one thing that they want, and that like I've been saying, they slowly, like the frog in the water as it boils, taking these things away. They have made it impossible with the regulations and everything for people to make profit anymore. They have overregulated every industry in the United States. And because of the overregulation and the cost it has on the companies, they've had to lay people off. It's not just the manufacturing base that's been sent out, but that is a large portion of it.
It's almost every single, especially in California, what they do to people in California, like if you just have a restaurant, it's heinous. It's unbelievable what they do. I mean, you would swear we were already in the old Soviet. I mean, it is absolutely stifling what they do. As far as I can see, with Obama and the UN and the EPA shutting down coal-fired plants, making it impossible. I mean, and then we've got these clowns here in San Diego. They're coming on the radio every hour saying, everybody's got to use flex power. You've got to shut off your air conditioning. Bull, it's your damn job to provide me with electricity. You know,
well,
I'm tired of it.
And you know what's ironic about that, Linda? This gets back into that CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports. Collectively, government in California, between the local, state, municipal, and the whole government in California, all the government entities, collectively, they own 98% of all the stock held in the electric producing companies in the state of California.
Yeah, and they have the chutzpah to tell us these things. I scream at my radio when they do it. I'm tired of it. It's their damn job, and everybody's paying. They've got high electricity rates, and they want us to, you know, what do they want us to do? Go to Sears and buy a generator? The whole thing's ridiculous.
Well, you think about it. The technology
is out there. The technology is out there for free electricity. Nikola Tesla proved that at the turn of the last century.
Okay? Yeah, I heard about that.
But you can't put a meter on that.
No, you can't put a meter on it. But you don't need to put a meter on it. It's free. I mean, he had up on Long Island, New York, he had a tower built. J.P. Morgan was sitting there backing him.
Yep.
And J.P. Morgan came out to find out what all was going on, how it was going, and Tesla made the comment, I can't wait to give this to the people.
Right.
Anyway,
Kilmer had a question.
What?
The Fed's charter up in two years or something?
I'm not sure. The federal charter was up in 1933, and no one ever renewed it. The thing is, I'd have to look up and find out what year it is. Sid has it on his computer. They gave the Federal Reserve basically a unending charter at this point.
How lovely.
which, by the way, is against the law.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
In Washington, D.C., there is only two entities that are allowed to hold a charter for more than 20 years. And that is a funeral home and a cemetery. I'm dead serious.
Well,
Nathan,
that's
the
wild.
Federal Reserve ran without a charter for about 60 years.
Yep.
Until they gave it an unending one.
So, Daniel, if you get this thing enacted or started or whatever, what would be your... Besides ending the Fed, what would be the step after that? Do you have any designs on getting rid of the UN?
The other three things I mentioned, the getting rid of anything that infringes upon the individual rights and getting rid of corporate personhood. The other three things that our amendment ends is, number one, it ends all the government debt, because the government will be closed down and then reestablished in a blink of an eye. And any debts that were incurred by the previous government, you know, same people will be up there, but the power of the people to control them and everything is back. But any debts incurred by the government unbeknownst to the people for the past government are null and void in our mind.
Good. Sounds good to me.
The fourth thing is it brings everything back to the Constitution and common law. And the last thing is it puts the people as the fourth branch of the government. Now, they call for the parliament. It's up in the air. It's up to the people how they want to form this. I believe in what Constitutional Lobby is doing. They want to have watchdogs on every bit of lawmaking authority from the city on up all the way to the Fed. And it gives us the right to proactively nullify any law that is unconstitutional.
Well, that's what we need to do, things that way, so that we can keep an eye on all the unconstitutional. I mean, we can go way back before even Bush Jr., you know. Now, Obama, he's just a naked Marxist. He's out in the open about it. He's not trying to hide, apparently, except from the drones, because they're too stupid to figure out that Biden's an idiot. But Bush did it. Clinton, both Bushes.
Biden wrote the Patriot Act.
The what?
Biden was one of the writers of the Patriot Act.
Oh, that does not surprise me. Well, if he writes at all, I guess he can write English. He sure as heck can't speak it very well. I just don't think he's very smart. I mean, that's just me. But, yeah. Oh, Ron was talking about the subsidiary, the Seed and Company.
Well, that's Seed and Company. This is one of the problems with the Federal Reserve System and what it's grown into, and a lot of people don't realize this. And Ron Paul is right, and I think one of the reasons that he backed off of ending the Fed, he still wants to end the Fed, but I think he recognized that he needed to take a different approach because his approach was seen as too radical. And the approach is that we first need a full above-board audit of the Federal Reserve System, which would include Seed and Company. What happened in the late 60s Seed and Company was born because what happened is, you know, when you transferred a stock, when someone bought or sold a stock, the stock certificates had to be changed to the name of the new owner, and it was very paper and labor intensive. And these stock transfer companies were on the hook for any mistakes they made. Okay? And it was a very laborious process. So they came up with the idea of this Seed and Company, which is a clearinghouse for 80 to 90% of all the stocks that are traded on the market, including ETFs and commodity funds.
Yeah, I know.
What,
you were telling
what that does is all the stock, and this is frightening, all of the stock, or 90% of it, is registered under the ownership of Seed and Company. So they are, by law, the actual legal owners of all that stock. And they simply transfer the rights to claim against that stock to different brokerage houses in the name of whatever the customer's name is. Now, a lot of the stock transactions are done off board, meaning they don't go through the clearinghouse. They're done between brokerage firms. And this is one way that they manipulate stock prices and their failure to close transactions, meaning that the stock never existed. You know, the guy at my local, Edward Jones, can call his buddy over, Merrill Lynch, and they say they're doing a trade of a million shares of stock that doesn't even exist.
Wow.
Just to pick up on the coattails, and they get paid, and then there's a failure to clear it finally, you know, 3 months later. It's crazy.
So how is any of this legal?
The federal government doesn't care about legal.
There you go.
What they do is they make the rules and they get the Supreme Court to back them up. Every branch of the government has been corrupted. And that's what
I
need
agree.
To clean house on. That's what
all
we need
them.
To clean house on. I mean, Citizens United would never pass the Supreme Court if they were looking at the constitutionality of it. Without taking their own impressions of what the amendment, of what all the amendments said. We need to bring back the original 13th Amendment for one. The one that all of a sudden disappeared during the Civil War.
Yes.
Right?
No lawyer can hold public office.
anybody that has been deemed, and back then, bankers were the same way. They had the term Esquire because they had to get registered with the bar in England.
Ah. Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah,
if you realize the word bar, I believe it's British Authentication Registry.
Yes.
Is what it stands for. And you know, I'm no stranger to this. My grandfather taught law after graduating from Harvard for 40 years at the University of Texas.
Huh.
So I found out about all this at a very young age. But every lawyer in this country is registered with the Crown.
Oh my God!
Every banker back then was also registered with the Crown. That's why they had the original 13th Amendment, to keep any of the lawyers and bankers out. They wanted common men in the Congress and the White House.
Yep.
And that's the reason they had the original 13th Amendment. It was ratified. The last state to ratify it was Virginia in 1825. And their argument is Virginia didn't ratify it legally. That's BS. It was on the books. It was on as an amendment, as the 13th Amendment. And if you'll notice, none of the amendments are numbered except for the 13th, 14th, and 15th. They had to do that when they changed out that amendment for Lincoln's 13th Amendment in order to verify that that's the 13th Amendment. That's it.
Well, guess what?
And the other one just disappeared. If you go to some of the states, like Virginia and I think Ohio, you can look back in their archives to the U.S. Constitution that they had back prior to 1861, and it has the original 13th Amendment in there. And that just states that no one can hold an office if they've received a title or honor from a foreign power. And they did that because of the bar and the way the bankers and the lawyers had to be registered.
Yep. You see, you talked about Harvard, and there's a great link out there for Yale University, believe it or not, and a wonderful professor that I stumbled across, and he was doing a class on the Civil War era, and I think I still have the link somewhere in my system. But he put forth, he's the only person I've ever heard besides myself put forth the idea that there was a new constitution and a new union created under Abraham Lincoln, and it started with the 13th Amendment.
Yes.
And it was done under military rule. You realize that, you know, all this crap they're yammering about voter registration, that all began during the Reconstruction Acts in the military districts in the South, because they didn't want any Southerners running in government, so they took military officers from the North and ran them, and they became governors and mayors and whatnot. And they were under military rule. The other thing is the 14th Amendment was ratified by Southern states that had seceded from the Union, and it was a condition of their being accepted back as a state that they had to vote to ratify the 14th Amendment, but they were no longer states at that point.
Oh, wow.
No, they were corporations of D.C.
Yeah, they were military districts at that point under martial law.
Yep.
The martial law has never been rescinded.
I know that. That was under the Lieber Code.
So Ron, I was going to ask, since it's never been rescinded, why did they go through these hoops of the NDAA and the Patriot Act, since it's never been?
Because
they want the modern day people to sit there and accept it. They go through these false flag things, and you can call conspiracy theory, whatever. I still believe that 9/11 was a false flag.
Yep.
I believe that the U.S. government was very cohesive in it, mainly Cheney. I don't think Bush knew that much about it. I think he knew about it, but he wasn't one of the planners. Face it, if it was actually a terrorist attack, they told Bush when he was standing outside that elementary room in Florida before he read the story to the kids that the first plane hit. They walked into the room as he was reading the story to the kids and said the second plane hit. I'm sorry, if that was actually a terrorist attack, he would have been whisked away before he even started reading that book to a safe bunker.
Well, now, you remember it. Very few people remember this, and I remember watching it. I was at work in Marietta. There was a report that morning after the second plane hit, and then they went back. There was a report that morning that, you know, Bush was at a local compound there in Florida, and he was rooming with a local sheriff, and they were going to go out jogging. And the compound was, of course, under military lockdown, and allegedly a white Ford van tried to gain entrance, and two Middle Eastern-looking men in the van were trying to gain entrance into the compound. My theory on it is that Cheney was instrumentally involved. He gave Bush an ultimatum, okay, that you're going to go along with this. You're going to do this or we're going to do this. And when Bush was outside the classroom and he was told, at that point he's thinking, this is probably an accident. When they walked in and told him the second plane hit, the look on his face tells the story. He knew who was behind it. He knew it was Cheney. And he thought, son of a B, they really did it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep. Nothing. I put nothing past these clowns. They've had power far too long. Sick of it.
And we need to take that power back. And that's what our amendment on our website's about. And everything is giving the people back the power to get everything done. But the thing is, it's going to take everybody that's already awakened to sign the petition, stand up, stand together, and start waking the other people up. We need to get together and get all the evidence. My mother is a devout Obamaite. Okay, she believes in Obama, everything. My sister's the same way, but I'm working on my mom right now. I showed her some things and everything, with proof on the computer. She won't look at anything unless you show her proof. I showed her a few things, and now she's starting to question.
Well, good. Praise the Lord.
Okay, and so I'm there's a number of people I'm doing this with, that are devout Democrats and everything, but they're starting to question with the things I'm showing them.
Good.
And everything, and they're starting to see the light. And that's what we all have to do. We all have to get with all the other people that are already awake, get them to sign the petition, and then go out and all of us en masse start working on the people that aren't awake.
Oh, I know.
We need to have everyone talk to their groups, and I hate the word patriots because there's so many different meanings of it.
I know.
And everything. But we need everybody to talk to their patriot groups, get the groups involved,
mm-hmm.
you know, get the whole group to sign the petition, and as a group, go out and work on everybody. That's the only way we're going to do it, is to get the mass numbers we need. And that way we can go to Washington and say, hey, the people want this, it will be so. Y'all had, you know, 60 million people vote in your election. We have 100 million people right here.
Right. Here's what I try to trying to get into my own speech patterns when I speak to these. I'm surrounded by libtards as well. I mean, I know what Mike's talking about when he says that word, because believe me, I have more than my share where I live, in my own community, in my own family. So other than my mother, I can speak to her about these things, and she's actually read many of my books, which is astounding and wonderful because she's an avid reader, and I love it. So she's totally awake. She's more awake than she even wants to be, but she gets it. What I'm going to try to explain to some of the people, because I can't talk to my sister and the rest of them, they won't let me. So when I see them, it's a no free speech zone. But what I am trying to explain to people is, look, I don't care if you think Obama's the greatest thing since sliced bread or french fries, and I don't care if you love Ron Paul or you love Romney or whatever. It doesn't matter, because I'm not going down that right-left paradigm with you people. I know mm-hmm. that my government at this point does not define who I am. My principles do. My values do. And that Constitution, that Declaration, and the principles of John Locke, Bastiat, Jefferson, and not the Hamiltonians, but the good guys, that's who I'm aligned with, and that's who I'm going with. And I listen to one king, only one king, and that's my Lord Jesus Christ. That's it.
Yes.
You know, and if we don't
The one thing that people have, I guess, a disagreement with us on is, and let me explain myself before you go off, Linda, is we do not believe that religion should be in government. Now, let me explain. The morals of the religion, yes, we need in government. Okay? I'm a Texas redneck Christian. Sid, my partner, is a New York Brooklyn Jew. If you base a government on religion, which religion would you base it on? Because there are so many different ones in the United States.
I don't believe in a theocracy at all, not at all. But
we need to base it on the morals behind the religion, because the morals transcend the religion.
You know, if they hold a session of Congress and those guys want to pray for 15 minutes, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. You know,
yeah,
I'm not saying,
and that's the only way we can have freedom of religion.
Right.
And is to have the government secular and people can believe whatever they want.
And what really caught my eye in this book that I'm reading now by Hayek was the word tolerance. And this is something lacking in many, many of us.
What is the name of that book again, Linda?
Pardon me?
What is the name of that book you're reading?
The Road to Serfdom.
I'm writing that down because I'm a big reader. My father, after he retired from corporate life, owned a bookstore for 5 years.
Daniel, this one is by F.A. Hayek. This is the old one that's like 40 years old or whatever. The other one was
okay.
Is by a Brit, the guy that has spoken on several talk shows. The British guy, I think his name's Daniel Hannan. He gets it. He's pretty cool. He understands liberty probably better than most people in the nation. Our name. That's a brand new book, Road to Serfdom. But this one is the old one by F.A. Hayek, who was originally from Vienna. The guy's brilliant. You will learn so much, even just in the first few pages. It's phenomenal. Very close. Thank you. Very close to von Mises. In fact, they knew each other. But that's why the one piece that I'll probably wind up doing next week on von Mises, because it's 5 pages long, so I'll get to that. It's almost identical to things that Ayn Rand would say or Hayek would say, you know, Milton Friedman. It's fascinating. And how the psychology of the Germans or the people who were the non-Germans back in this time, blaming Nazism for the totalitarianism rather than understanding the difference between what true freedom should be and free markets and capitalism as opposed to socialism. It's fascinating. So you've got to go. You know what I'm saying? We need to get back to our basic roots.
Well, that's true. And at that point, when we take the power back to the people, there's going to have to be an education of the masses. Because no one really knows how to live in a republic. Because they don't know really what freedom is.
No, because we haven't had it since probably before my mother was born.
Oh, we haven't really had it since the early 1800s.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Everything used to be in absolutes. It was either truth or false. It was either right or wrong. And there are two people that came up that changed that. One of them unintentionally and one of them on purpose. The one that did change it unintentionally was Albert Einstein with his law of relativity. Because people twisted what he did and came out to say that everything is relative, there are no absolutes.
And
that's when you start having gray areas where people would just, and get something by. The other one was Sigmund Freud.
Oh, that guy was That was bad, too.
He,
I know.
He started psychoanalyzing everything and taking the relativism to a new peak.
Yep.
And those, you know, like I say, Albert Einstein did it unintentionally. They took what he did and twisted it. But Sigmund Freud did it intentionally.
Ron, did you have any parting shots before I go to do the rundown of the shows?
No. You know, just thanks for letting me call in, and always enjoy the show, and God bless.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, and it was great to hear all the stuff about Seed and Company, because I had kind of put that on the back burner from many months ago when you had talked about it. And I remember you and Frank Winkle used to talk about things like that all the time. I kind of miss him. You guys going back and forth with the Ottoman Empire and the Federal Reserve and the stock market. That was kind of wild. Daniel, thank you also for joining. Did you have anything to say just before you leave? Because I'm going to do a rundown of the shows. I got about 3 minutes.
Just everybody, go to www.reclamationprojectx.org. Read the petition. Please sign it and help us spread the word. We have to go viral with this because time is short.
Yes. Thank you so much. And I did do that. I sent it out to many sites. You know, I can only bring it to them and give my suggestions, but I did send it. I went through and perused everything I could and I had time for. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in, Bill, Ron, Doc, Daniel, ProTracker, Mike, Jomer, everyone that was here before. Tomorrow night is wonderful talk show host Terry Rowland, who's a teacher for Patriot Education, 7 p.m. Eastern on Patriot Families Blog Talk Radio. Friday, I'm going to tune into Mike's show, Hot Seat, the right is, or the left is never right. And he's on Friday, I believe, 8 p.m. Eastern. But we used to have a show on Patriot Families, but I think our host has kind of put his show on hiatus. So Saturdays we sometimes have Michael Magic, and he's on 7 p.m. Eastern, Exposing the Illusion. Sundays, Ron fills in for Fed Up Frank, Fed Up Frank show. That's 7 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. Mondays is Ron's Constitution Hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday nights, talking about many subjects. It's a wonderful show. You guys, everybody come in. Tuesday, Bill and Hollis, normally Patriot Family Chat, and Bill's got some great ideas for a new show coming up, 7 p.m. Eastern. Back to me on Wednesdays, right from the left coast. And God bless you guys. It was wonderful. Let me see if I can get you out with some music here. Anyway, we've got about 1 minute or less left, and just again, we'll go back to patriotfamilies.com. And what we have is one of these crazy... if you give them enough circuses, they'll believe anything.
Here comes the old rouser.